Technorama episode 451. Does this planet make me look Titan?
Good morning, folks. This is your captain speaking.
Technorama.
Remember when?
Technorama.
On this day in tech history.
Tech.
And now, the news.
Tech.
What the chuck?
Technorama.
Welcome to Blockhead Video.
I'm looking for Waldo and Carmen Sandiego. Have you seen them?
Over there, in the media corner.
I found Waldo.
Technorama.
I found Carmen Sandiego.
Watch this.
Unfasten your seatbelts and disregard all safety rules. Here, your flight crew, Chuck and Craig.
Didn't somebody have a sign like that at Dragon Con?
Which one?
Looking for Waldo and Carmen Sandiego. That was a t-shirt we saw.
Oh, yeah. And I did see them, though. Both of them.
Together.
Yes, one time. It was kind of weird and, you know, it's one of those things you don't want to put up on Facebook.
You guys aren't hiding very well if we can find you both in the same place at the same time.
Best place to hide is out in the open.
Welcome to Technorama. This is the show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. If this is your first time listening or watching us, thank you. Thank you for joining us. If you're a returning viewer or listener, welcome back. We appreciate you giving us your time. I am Chuck Tomasi, and with me as always is Craig Stepp. How are you, Craig?
I got my head up in the stars today.
You do? What happened?
Yeah. Well, a hammer fell off a shelf. I went to see The Martian. I'm going to talk about it a little bit later, but I went and saw The Martian.
That makes me very, very angry.
Take me to your leader.
You stole the...
No, I can't do it.
The Pew-36 explosive space modulator.
You can do it.
Let's get going. It's hard to think of those things on the spot. Coming up in this episode, we have a new time travel machine. We have self-driving taxis and some really, really cool nicknames. All that more coming up right after this. What is that?
It's localized.
Blah, blah, blah. I'm like, ooh, yay, yay.
Oh, that's not good.
Yeah, things are all rancid.
Was it past the expiration date?
Would you like shipping instructions with that?
Lickety splickety snappity working just fine.
Chuck and Craig on Technorama. What is it with these guys?
He never calls the help desk. He doesn't listen to podcasts. They listen to him. He can recite the original Star Wars trilogy, word for word, reproducing the sound effects with his armpits. He is the most interesting geek in the world.
I don't always listen to podcasts, but when I do, I listen to Technorama. Stay geeky, my friend.
The viewers got a little bonus. They found out who plays that music on the guitar.
Who plays it? Huh?
I was playing the air guitar while that was going.
Oh, yeah. Oh, well. Breaking the third wall. Fourth wall.
Oh, darn.
Breaking the second wall.
Here, let's play some more instruments. And sing. Yay. Sing. Sing your heart out.
The zombie.
Sing it in Wookiee.
Yeah.
Oh boy. We disrespected that song again.
It's falling to the zombie dimension.
Mission accomplished. We asked you, faithful listener, last week, what movie have you seen most? Justin wrote back and said, Blade Runner or, A Christmas Story.
Yes.
I watch it roughly 1.5 times each year at a minimum, maybe more on average.
I would say that way, as far as rewatching, I didn't even think about that one, but he's right. That
Christmas Story.
Yeah, that would be high on my list.
Yes. You really have no choice 1.5 days a year.
And especially if you're watching TBS.
It should say I watch it roughly 1.5 days a year.
You know, I watched it so many times. I remember one year I went to sleep watching it and I woke up. It was like 10 minutes later into the film, but it was like 4 hours later in real time.
Yep. Yeah. And you always seem to turn it off and turn it back on at the same place.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
The line stretched all the way back to Terre Haute. Come back after dinner, after you've opened presents. The line stretched all the way back to Terre Haute.
Or now he's finally up at Santa.
All right. And Rob writes back. He says, The Empire Strikes Back, Raiders of the Lost Ark, Megaforce, and Rocky Horror Picture Show. They are all about even.
I would say Empire. Yes, of course. And Raiders.
And I think you said one of the Star Wars movies and Back to the Future, or one of the Back to the Futures last week, right?
If we're talking like scene in the theater.
No, anywhere. You could be watching it on your phone. Anywhere? I don't care. What movie have you seen the most?
Yeah, Back to the Future behind that list. Any of the original trilogy, Star Wars especially. And like A Christmas Story. Those are all, you know, things that if I see somewhere, or I just get the idea to watch it, I'll go grab a DVD of it. You know, so those are ones I rotate.
You have to... I totally blanked on that. I was going to say something. Anyway. Wizard of Oz. Oh, that's a good one. Yes.
I haven't seen that in a long time.
But it used to be on every year. That was like the thing to stay up for.
You're right. I remember, it would come on almost annually and we would stay up and watch it. Yeah, it was a big thing. Yeah. That's a good movie too.
There are some Mystery Science Theater movies that I've watched over and over and over again.
You know what gets me is, you know, nowadays it's a big focus on who's directing the movie. Almost as much as who's in the movie.
A Christopher Nolan film. Make it a good film and I don't care.
But look at something like The Wizard of Oz. It had multiple directors.
I totally forgot about that. You are right. This is where we need Ben and Keith. Where are they?
Who knows?
Doing their own show, probably at the same time. They probably did that on purpose.
Yeah.
Just so they can have an excuse not to come over here. Oh,
no, I just thought that was interesting.
We're just razzing them. We know they listen to this show.
Yeah. Right.
Speaking of Ben Rangerton wrote in and he said, Chuck is right regarding the rotation and revolution of the moon. Ha ha. From last week.
Shut up.
If the moon had no rotation while orbiting the Earth, then the same side of the moon would forever face the sun. However, the same side of the moon faces the Earth, which means it has to be, it rotates in perfect synchronicity with its revolution, thereby allowing the Earth to always see the same side. I was going to get into some analogy with like stirring the soup pot and the spoon in your hand.
Mm-hmm.
If you hold onto the spoon tightly, it's not rotating, right? But it is revolving around the pot.
Yes.
But if you loosen it up and you made the same side of the spoon always face the outside of the pot, then it's rotating in your hand.
I understand that now.
Okay.
And I want to thank Ben deGrasse Tyson for writing in.
Very nice. And Donna just put the image on the screen of you holding your money confused like Fry. Shut up and take my money.
Yeah, perfect.
Very appropriate. We are working on getting Craig's video feed integrated into the show soon. Yes. Soon. That's our grand experiment in the next week or so.
Then you can just see the confused face anytime you want. Hey,
thank you for writing in, listeners, and writing back. And if you aren't listening to show 450 at the moment, or you listen to it, you know, weeks and weeks after we recorded on September 20, whatever it was, 2015, we would like to invite you anyway to respond. Why are you sliding the video over onto my second screen?
Oh,
Donna's checking the chat room. What do we got? Sorry. None.
I can't tell you until I Tim Elliott, Zaha Doom.
Ah, good. Tim Elliott, Zaha Doom. We'll give the shout out later. Thank you, you two. No Scott this time? All right, it is the history lesson. This is the part of the show where you listen to us try and explain or pronounce funny names. Or, I mean, different names.
Or how the moon rotates around Earth.
On this day in history for October 7th, 2015. This is the 280th day in the Gregorian calendar. There are 85 days remaining in 2015. The other thing you listen for is crazy editing mistakes that I make. It was on this date in 1542, explorer Cabrillo discovers Santa Catalina Island off the California coast.
There it is.
Because of the implementation of the Gregorian calendar, this day is skipped in Italy, Poland, in Portugal, and Spain on this date in 1582.
That's always a fun check. Go onto your Unix machine and type in Cal space 10 space 1582 and see if it respects the Gregorian calendar. You should see about 5 or 10 days missing.
It's actually the John Hughes version of Europe takes Europe's day off.
You'll get the editing, the director's cut later.
Right.
The Granite Railway begins operation as the first chartered railway in the U.S. on this date in 1826.
It was 103 years ago today that the Helsinki Stock Exchange sees its first transaction.
And there
ching,
it
ching.
Went. Someone sold something. We don't have anything to sell.
And they framed the dollar and put it on the wall.
October 7, 1916, Georgia Tech defeated Cumberland University 222-0. The most lopsided college football game in American history.
That'll leave a mark. And 82 years ago today, Air France is inaugurated after being formed by a merger of 5 French airlines.
They all crashed into each other at the same time. October 7th, 1958, the U.S. manned spaceflight project is renamed Project Mercury.
And 56 years ago today, the USSR probe Luna 3 transmits the first ever photographs of the far side of the moon, which we never see.
Right. It's not the dark side of the moon.
Yeah, see the aforementioned conversation.
Go back one show. Right. Also, in 1996, the Fox News Channel begins broadcasting, and news was never the same. Yeah. Happy birthday goes out on this date to Danish physicist and Nobel Prize laureate Niels Bohr, born on this date in 1885.
And as I step on Chuck, several computer scientists have birthdays today, including Henriette Avram.
Avram? I don't know. Avram? Isn't that like DRAM?
Oh, like DRAM. I got you. Okay. In 1919, John Hopcraft, who was
Croft.
Turned 76. Croft. I'm sorry. I thought that was an A in there. And turning 60 is Ralph Johnson. He is his name I can get.
Sort of.
Ralph.
The co-founder of the IMAX Corporation, Graham Ferguson, turns 86.
And South African Archbishop and Nobel Prize laureate, Desmond Tutu is 84.
You said Tutu. And finally, Yo-Yo Ma is 60, the famous cellist. And that's the way it was on this day in history for October 7th, 2015. Phew. Thought they'd never leave.
And the good news keeps on coming.
Well, I don't know if you'd call this good news or not with all the news about Google self-driving cars crashing into things. But, you know, more humans crash than robot cars at this point. But that might just be sheer numbers. I don't know what the ratio is.
I was going to say, let's look at a ratio. yeah, you're right.
However, despite facts and figures, self-driving taxis will soon begin trials in Japan next year. Self-driving cars are a few years away from becoming a thing, right? Not so in Japan, where the company Robot Taxi, Johnny Cab, has announced that it'll start testing...
Where would
testing,
you like to go?
Thank you for riding, Johnny Cab. ...are testing robotic taxis in 2016. A report by the Wall Street Journal reveals that the firm will begin by offering autonomous rides to 50 people in Kanagawa Prefecture, just outside Tokyo. The limited trial will ferry the participants from their homes to local stores and back again, all the while with a human operator in the driving seat, just to make sure nothing goes wrong.
Wait, I see a monetization opportunity.
For what?
Well, if you're a store and you sponsor this, they will bring people to your store.
Hopefully alive.
Well, I mean, I could see like, you know, there's a bunch of mom and pop shops around and Walmart says, you know what, we'll sponsor the self-driving car. It'll just bring people to the store and take them back home.
It doesn't matter where you want to go. You're always going to end up at a Starbucks.
Or Walmart.
Walmart.
Yeah.
Take us to the dry cleaners. Here's your Starbucks.
Take us to our marketing overlords.
If the experiments are successful, Robot Taxi expects to have fully commercial service up and running by 2020. The idea, at least initially, will be to run routes in places where public transport isn't built out, as well as helping tourists get around. If you check out the video below, you'll notice that the stars of the clip aren't hip young millennials. They're an elderly couple looking to get out and about.
Yeah, as they're running by little boys and everybody's happy to see them and waving.
To show how safe this is, they put kids out in front of the vehicle.
Yeah.
I love the nuances of that little video. They're priceless. Go watch, check through, click through the show notes. You'll see it in the news section, self-driving taxis. I want to give a quick shout out to all of the people who have donated to Technorama to keep the bandwidth and everything up and running. Thank you. Thank you very much for your donations. Craig and I are working on another program, of course, through Patreon. So we won't do anything with your PayPal donations. You can choose whether to opt in, opt out, Patreon, do both. That would be lovely as well. So we'll let you know when that's done. We sketched out a... Do it all. Sign up.
We want all the monies.
As she puts the picture of you and your money up on the screen again. Good timing. That was almost preemptive. Looking at the birthday calendar, we have three birthdays on October 9th. It's Suko Rumke. It sounds like it's Suko. Good, because that's how I pronounced it. Mario from New Jersey and our own daughter, Lisa.
Yay.
Lisa. Wow. It's been like 10 years since she's been on the show.
Is she 32 now?
I'm not saying for privacy reasons.
Okay. So 50.
1010 has two birthdays on our illustrious birthday calendar, Victor Cahiao and Garrett Rafal. And then 1011 is our own Bruce Barr, whom we haven't heard from in an eon. Very long time. And Jason Schwanz is on the 13th.
Hint.
Okay. Yeah, if he's still out there listening, Bruce, we'd love to hear from you. But wish you and everybody else a happy birthday. Even if you're not on the birthday calendar, happy birthday to you. I heard that the musical rights are now in the public domain to that song.
Yes, due to a public, judge ruling. Yes, it is not. It has, or it is rather, because
who owned it? AOL or somebody?
No, Amazon? It's another company. It was like Warner something. And I don't think it's necessarily Warner Brothers, but it's Warner / something. And there was the copyright was because there was an assumption that the lyrics and the words were together or something like that. And apparently they were not. And anyway, somehow it fell through and he said, no, it's not copyrighted.
Well, the music wasn't even written for a happy birthday. It was good morning to you. One of those kind of songs.
Right. And I think that has something to do with it.
Okay. Well, now we can start injecting real music in there when we wish people happy birthdays. Won't that be nice? We can sing along to another song.
Yeah.
If you are not on our wonderful birthday calendar or haven't been in the last 10 years, go over to chuckchat.com/wiki and we'll wish you a happy birthday for at least the next 10. How's that
work? Happy birthday to you calendar.
We feel liberated for some reason. All right. We're going to come right back with the Hacks and Strange Stories, Remember When, and a whole bunch of other fun and goofy stuff. Stick around. You might enjoy it. No promises.
That's a big might.
Technorama presents PowerPoint Poetry. Quarter 3 fiscal results. Income $135 million, up 15.3% year over year. Net profit 7.8%. Operating margin 6%. Net new customers 135. SG&A expenses $35 million. Q3 also saw the completion of a new supply chain management system in the US and Asia. European offices are scheduled to go live next quarter. This concludes PowerPoint Poetry by Technorama.
Thank you. Tim Zer, what do you think of Technorama?
It does a wonderful job getting my bathroom grout clean.
You'll never hear a quarterly earnings report again. It's quite the same way.
Okay.
As I was recording that, I thought, this is so boring. I have to put some snoring in it.
I'm sorry, what? What? Yeah.
Shall we do the hacks and strange stories?
Why, Leos, let's do it.
I feel like I have to put the glasses on when I do that.
And by the way, never mind. We'll talk about it later.
All right. First up in the stories, why don't you take this one?
Sure. And this is a great little hack. It's a DeLorean golf cart.
I want one.
I know. It looks
not
great.
Not just
it looks
a DeLorean golf cart.
No. So here we go. The headline is DeLorean golf cart can probably hit 88 miles per hour. And the article reads, that's my bet. After all, you wouldn't build a time machine out of in a vehicle that wasn't capable of hitting a necessary speed. David Heikants, he can't pronounce it. A hot rod builder in Red Deer, Alberta, would have taken that detail into account while designing his DeLorean Back to the Future golf cart. Yep. Lucas,
go ahead.
Lucas Evan Ochko. Made the electronic components, as you can see above, and you can see there's a screen that has the time display.
It's a little embedded Android tablet.
Yes, it's a little embedded Android tablet, and you can see his time selector screen, far more interface than was available in 1985. In addition to the lights, Eventroco rigged the sound effects, push buttons in the cockpit, which you can watch in a complete walkthrough here. And there's a video when you can see it light up and it has the blue time bar or whatever. I'm not even sure what that is on the outside.
I didn't see a flux capacitor between the two seats, though.
No, but there is a Mr. Fusion.
There is a Mr. Fusion on the back. And it looks like from his backyard that he's got a few other projects because I see hoods and boats and things from other projects.
I think there is a flux capacitor right around the head
maybe.
Seat.
Yep, you're right. In the little box.
Yeah, there's a little box right there, but he's too busy showing everything else around. But it's got the components in the back of it with the fins for the displacement or whatever for the heat. And he's got the lights all around it.
I drilled through a couple of links for you, but if you go to our show notes, right underneath the story link, there's a photo gallery of the whole build out process. Very, very cool. Another one of these guys who really needs a hobby. Well, I guess he's got one.
He's got one. He builds DeLorean golf carts.
Must not have a wife. He could probably end up selling those. That's my bet.
You know, it'd be awesome if he had that and he had like a General Lee one and he had an old Batman one. You know, like all the the Ghostbusters.
You can't put a Batmobile one. You can't put the Confederate flag on top of the...
Oh, don't go there. Don't go there.
That was so last summer.
Oh, don't go there.
Next story.
By the way, I say you can because it was in the show. That's the only reason I put it on there.
Next story. Russian scientist injects himself with 3.5 million-year-old eternal life bacteria.
This is like the beginning of every Marvel movie, isn't it? Superhero, I'll just test it myself.
Well, we should have some movie music. A group of Russian scientists believe that the secret to eternal youth might actually lie in the permafrost of Siberia.
Well, they just eat it. I can make a snow cone out of it.
Who wants a snow cone?
Who wants a snow cone?
They're experimenting with a strain of bacteria that has managed to survive for millions of years in the permafrost. One enterprising scientist has even injected himself with the ancient bacteria discovered in 2009 in Sakha Republic, Siberia. Anatoly Brushkov head of the geocryology department at Moscow State University, is the man behind the remarkable discovery. 2 years ago, he volunteered to become a guinea pig for the 3.5 million year old bacteria after several successful trials on mice and human blood cells. Oh, thank goodness they tried it on something before he just went, hey, this looks like it could be fun. And he claims to have become healthier and more energetic ever since.
Okay.
Men, do you want to raise your libido? Try this really old bacteria.
Step on up. We got snow cones with eternal life bacteria. Come on.
Quote, I started to work longer. I have never had a flu for the last 2 years. He told the Siberian Times. He did admit that his feeling of being healthier could be more physiological than scientific. Quote, I cannot professionally describe the effects, he said. It was quite clear to me that I did not catch flu for 2 years. Of course, such experiments need to be conducted in clinic with the several special equipment and statistics. Then we could say clearly about all effects. So, it's too early to market the bacteria because scientists are yet to understand how exactly it prevents aging. So far, they're only able to determine that the bacteria promotes longevity in mice and fertility in older female mice. Hey, but they haven't uncovered its secret. They still need to understand what keeps the bacteria alive. What is the mechanism preventing the age damages, and how can we use it for our own benefits?
Wow. Hmm.
All right, there's a few more lines of the article, but that's a brave soul to inject himself with some old bacteria.
Well, I guess you could probably, they may have a good indication whether it was going to be harmful or anything, but depending on, but I don't know, can they tell that?
Well, they tested it on mice, right?
And right.
They're pretty close genetically. So if they didn't die and turn black and eat brains, yeah, that's pretty good.
Well, it's only been 2 years. Okay, so really just about anybody don't really change that much in 2 years, maybe 5 or 10, you know, something that arranged. But how would you know
that it worked? Well, there's a lot of things we're doing today that we don't understand the effects until years later.
Like the moon rotating?
Like cellular radiation from your phone to your brain.
Do you believe that?
No. That's okay. Why I said it.
Anyway, it's kind of interesting. What they should have done was done a placebo. Give one guy a regular snow cone and one guy another
one. The bacteria. I don't think it was quite in a snow cone. I don't think that's the delivery vehicle.
But I don't like strawberry. Just eat it.
Try this Kool-Aid from Guyana. All right. Shout out to the chat room. Who do we have in the chat room at the moment?
I see Justin Deal.
Justin?
I see Tim Elliott.
And this is like romper room.
Yeah, and Zahadoom. That's all I see in there.
All right. Well, we're getting back down to the track. It's been a while. We were offline for live streaming for a while, so it's good to see everybody there. If you want to join us, 9:30 Eastern time on Sunday nights is when we record. Sometimes we start a little early just so we can have some chit-chat among friends, and then we hit the record button for the audio people.
That's right.
So you may get some bonus stuff at the beginning. You may get some bonus stuff at the end. The video is a lot of fun.
And hopefully it is.
Join Craig and me. And like I said, we're working to get Craig's video back up and running. Oh, likely not to have a recording on October 11th as my parents will be in town.
So get them on the show.
We've got plenty of seats. I don't think the show quite resonates with them unless we're interviewing somebody important that they know.
You can make this show resonate with them. Let me tell you how.
Go ahead.
Show them what you did to the old computer.
I'm probably in trouble for taking that thing apart. Oops.
Yeah. Son, that was our only backup.
I just took pictures. Oh, wait. No, those are my hands with this power drill. Dang it.
Son, those were only backups. You ruined it. And now,
let's go to the media corner before I get in more trouble.
Welcome to Blockhead Video. Hey, where can I find some good information about music and TV and videos and things?
Over here, in the media corner.
Hey, you did have your parents on the show one time, right?
When we interviewed Richie Kohler, I believe.
Yeah, that was it.
Yep. Well, and that was a natural lineage thing. You know, there was a connection there because they were early pioneers in scuba diving. So.
Yep.
Anywho, would you like to take the next story about crappy superhero movies?
What?
You put it in here. Should you feel bad for liking crappy superhero movies?
I think you're missing a piece of the show.
Oh, the vinyl records. No. What did I miss?
Go up.
Up?
The 10 most excellent nicknames in history.
Oh, remember when? All right, let's do that instead.
Okay, back up.
Listener, don't pay attention.
Yeah. Watch while we get in the DeLorean go-kart and go back in time about 5 minutes.
Not the first time we've accidentally scrolled a little too fast through the links. Okay. So anyway, 10 most excellent nicknames in history.
Now, I don't know if I agree with these, but
I think they're pretty good.
Yeah.
They seem factual. I'm not going to go look them up to dispute them.
All right. We're going to read them all or just kind of skip over a few of them. And
read the names. And if the listener wants to dig in more to what these names, the history behind them, there's a couple of paragraphs on each one.
All right. So number 10, and if I've had a dime for every time I heard this one, Ulick of the Heads.
Do you really, how many dimes would you have? One?
Yeah, maybe. Now? Yeah, just one.
A. Stein the Fart.
I thought I said Einstein. Close. The Queen of the Bees.
Not to be
confused with Queen of the Bee Gees.
Number 7, the Great Asparagus.
He's a vegetable. All right. The Little Impaler.
We don't have a picture for every one of these, but Don's trying to keep in sync.
Yeah.
The Little Impaler. Number 5, He Who Sees in the Dark.
Oh, man. Some of these are pretty good. The Unavoidable.
I think everybody works with somebody who's unavoidable.
Yes, right.
This guy reminds me of the character on Bugs Bunny. Mr. Christian?
Actually, I thought he looked like one of those guys off Dune.
Or a before picture of George Washington when on his weight loss package.
Before he got on Jenny Craig.
Right. Number 3, The Boneless.
Okay, okay. You know what? It happens to every guy.
Hey, Olaf. Yes, Torun? Ivar is pretty badass leader, Viking leader, you know? He's such a great fighter. He's ferocious. Yeah, he fights like he's possessed or something. He just rips through the other people's armies. He's so fast. Let's call him Ivar the Boneless. Okay.
Where did he get that
number
nickname?
2.
His girlfriend gave it to him.
Ooh.
Oh, okay. Maybe we'll learn long. The Black Swallow of Death. Oh, my God.
That sounds actually pretty cool.
Yeah.
That'd be a good superhero name. And number 1, the Universal Spider.
Spider-Man.
He works with metric or English, I guess.
Yeah.
There are some others in the comments that I'm not going to say because this is a family-friendly show.
The question of the week, if you have a nickname. I'm just kidding.
No, that's not the question of the week. We'll come back to the question of the week. All right. Zipping right over to the media corner. There we're back.
We yeah. Time travel. It always makes my head hurt.
All right. Now, should you feel bad for liking crappy superhero movies?
No.
Why not?
Because anybody's entitled to like what they like. Hey, you know what? For all the stuff you see at Dragon Con, you would be spending your entire life trying to hate on other people's likes because there's so many of them.
I can't even decipher half of the costumes I see. It's like, what's that?
I
don't know. It's from some strange, obscure movie reference or board game or video game, or there are so many that are outside of genres I don't even participate in that it's very difficult. But hey, someone's going to get it and laugh.
I can appreciate the effort that goes into some of those costumes.
This article is really made up of two main letters to the author, or maybe it's three. Three? Mm-hmm. Three. Oh, I missed the second one. Darn it. Or maybe it's four. Four. Four.
Our
chief weapons are fear. Fear and surprise. And this is the article author refers to himself as Mr. Postman. So people are writing into this letter. Dear Mr. Postman, here's an example. I'm 67 years old. Yes, that is important. The thing is, I haven't read comics since I was a kid, except for October 1969 to February 1970, when I was in Vietnam in the U.S. Air Force. For some reason, I really got into Daredevil and Spider-Man. They helped me cope with the war. And if I ever meet Stan Lee, I'll shake his hand. Anyway, I don't read comics now. The last video game I was into was Doom, which I finished. Now, I'm into comics or video... I'm not into comics or video games at all. My point is, even if the comic fans hate a comic book-based movie, I will probably enjoy it. I saw the pilot of Daredevil on Netflix and loved it. However, I also enjoyed the Ben Affleck version.
Okay.
I understand the comics and video game fans are hypercritical of movies coming out, but I think the studios are aiming for a larger audience than a specific fan base.
To a large degree, maybe.
Might this mean that the studios will keep on putting out the comic and video game-based films? I know I love them. I think more people than the fans of the original comics will, too. Must I be ignored just because I don't post in the comics forums on the web? Must I feel guilty, parenthetical, or stupid, for enjoying Ben Affleck's turn as Daredevil? I don't think so. How about it? Is there enough of the market for comics or video game-based films outside the fan base? And absolutely. Short answer is the Mr. Postman says, yes. So, there's more in here about Star Wars. The other one I read was around Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Have you seen the season opener yet?
Yes, I did.
Season three. Mm-hmm. What do you think about what they did to Bobby's character?
I thought that was... She went from being tough girl to scientist.
Because Gemma's like, wow, out of the picture. It's like, right. Oh, so not only is she this kick butt fighter, but she's really smart too. Let's introduce that. And it was kind of like, you know, would have helped if you warmed us up to that idea in season two a little bit, like maybe work elbow to elbow with Gemma or Fitz. Mm-hmm. And
well, in all fairness, she was hanging out with Gemma a good bit. So maybe she,
but she wasn't like running the mass spectrometer or anything.
Yeah, I will. I at first I was like, wait a minute, did I miss something?
Yes, that's what it felt like to me.
And I was trying to think, what did I miss? What did I not remember? But I mean, I remembered everything just right, except for what you just mentioned. It was like, oh, she's all of a sudden scientist. Okay.
Let's see how that show is going. I am encouraged at how season three is starting out.
Oh, I think it's pretty good so far. So, yeah. I'm good.
I also am enjoying the new season of Sleepy Hollow, which started this week as well. So, lots of new shows, and lots of shows are restarting this week. So, we may be talking about more TV shows and stuff.
Okay. I did want to throw this out there, and I don't remember if I mentioned this other day, but I know you don't like sitcoms per se, but I've been stuck on The Goldbergs. Have you watched that at all?
Not at all.
There are so many, there's so many 80, I mean, the whole thing is it's based in the 80s.
Right.
So it's like, the whole show is a reference to the 80s, and it's fun to watch, and the characters are good, and I really like it. I've been burning through, I'm through a season and a half now, and I started watching the new ones, because you don't have to watch them in continuity. So season three started, so I watched the new ones. It's a fun show.
Does it have canned laughter?
No, it's not like that.
Oh, okay. Most sitcoms do.
Not that kind of sitcom where they have a studio audience. It's not like that.
No, well, most sitcoms don't have a studio audience anymore.
No, that's what I'm saying. It's just a situation comedy, but not necessarily.
You tried tricking me into Big Bang Theory, too.
That's a good show.
I'm one of the few who disagrees.
Okay. All right. Well, try The Goldbergs. You can watch it on Hulu, Netflix, or something like that.
All right.
Give it a shot. Just give it a few episodes. You'll like it.
All right. Also in the media corner, we have...
excuse me.
Vinyl is not dead. We've known this for a while, that vinyl sales are kind of on a rebound.
But here's the interesting fact.
The interesting fact is that the sales generated more money this year than free streaming music. And when I first read this headline, I went, well, that makes sense because it's free streaming music. What part about free don't you understand? But it's the ad revenues they throw in there.
Well, you know what? When I first read this headline, my first thing was, I thought it said more money this year than streaming music. And I went, what? No way. There's no way.
It generated more revenue. The RIAA, the Recording Industry Association of America, reported that U.S. consumers bought $226 million worth of vinyl records in the first half of the year, Contrast that to $162.7 million in revenues from ad-supported streams like that of Pandora and Spotify. Mm-hmm. And it looks like people are actually paying a significant chunk of change for music. More money is being made on record sales than money is generated from ad-based online music. As The Telegraph points out, however, these numbers don't factor in paid streaming. If you group in revenues from services like Spotify Premium and Rhapsody, that puts a total of about $480 million in the streaming books. And the momentum of newer ventures like Apple Music and Tidal will jack up the pay-for stream numbers as well. So,
I do Google Music and I don't see it listed here.
It's probably all lumped in. You're just in that trailing.
And I do pay for Google Music.
The part of the Pareto chart that nobody pays attention to.
Mm-hmm. I do pay for Google Music, though.
Spotify's stated payout range to artists is $0.006, which would be a 6/10 of a penny, to 84 hundredths of a penny per song stream. It's true that some new artists can gain traction and exposure through streaming, but the costs of making music are high and musicians need to eat. Well, you can just sing into a microphone GarageBand.
Yeah.
Some people claim that the vinyl comeback will somehow account for declining revenues in CD sales and more recently the decline in download purchases. I don't buy that. I think you need multiple avenues for people to get it. And if the people want the retro warm analog sound, doggone, they can get them. I think we ought to be investing like in turntables though and make it easier to get those things.
Well, there's a bunch of them on Amazon, USB ones.
You know, I had one that recorded straight to an SD card and it sounded like garbage. It was really terrible. Oh. So you do have to spend more than $100 if you want a decent, but then you're recording it to a digital format. That's kind of against the law.
Well,
how's that work?
Not necessarily. You get all the record pops and all that kind of stuff in it.
Yeah, in your digital recording.
And I would, you know what? That would be fine with me. I had a copy of the Violent Femmes, one of their albums, and I had it a CD, but I also had a copy of the album, and I preferred listening to the copy. It was a tape, of course, not an MP3, but the tape of the album, because between tracks you'd hear when it went into the next track. I love that. It had a better sound to it.
Did you ever have a record that had a skip or a pop or something and you just sort of grew accustomed to the lack of lyrics in that point or the repeat of lyrics?
Yes.
I think it was a Seals and Crofts song and a Diamond Girl by Seals and Crofts. And when they got to the part where they say, "It's about you that I am," it would somehow skip or something, and it would sound like he sneezed, and he said, "It's a what you that I."
And then when you hear it on the radio, you go, "That's
it never sounds right." It's like, what are these extra words?
Yeah, amazing.
Take the last train to Clarksville. You gotta fix it.
My dad has got this beautiful old Yamaha turntable.
Yes.
And I love it. And he's got a nice little record collection.
Direct drive or belt drive?
It's a belt drive.
Mm.
And he's got a nice little collection of albums along with the original Beatles albums I grew up on. I can still remember putting down Rubber Soul on that album and listening to the whole thing. Love it. Love it.
All right.
Good time.
One
Good
last
time,
article,
man.
And then Craig gives us a little bit of movie talk.
Yeah.
Let's go back to the Geek Library.
Oh, how pretty brain.
Love
brain.
Doing that. That is fun.
I forgot to eat peanuts.
Oh, Snotty beamed me twice last night. Yeah. Dungeons and Dragons and libraries should be a natural fit. Both attract people who love books, storytelling, and lore. Early D&D game books even point readers towards their local libraries for research. And many libraries host comic book themed events or have D&D clubs. This is why I was so surprised to learn how rare it is for libraries to collect D&D or any... Rare it is. I thought they said not. Oh, or any role-playing game materials. How rare? Well, for instance, did you know Snooki from MTV's Jersey Shore is a novelist? There are 647 copies of her book, A Shore Thing, circulating in libraries across the country, and 376 copies of the sequel, Gorilla Beach. Both of them are more widely collected than anything in the entire role-playing game genre. This is strange. Role-playing games have been an important part of the science fiction and fantasy scene for 40 years. Many librarians are huge science fiction and fantasy readers. A study I published last year found that virtually every library in America has graphic novels in some form, and a significant percentage have clubs or events dedicated to comic books or manga. Manga? Manga.
Manga.
I've heard both, actually, and I'm not sure now.
Go to the library and look it up.
The New York Times recently noted the impact D&D and other games in the genre have had on a generation of creators. So why do we find scant few D&D or other role-playing game materials in libraries? That's a very good question. We would love to know the answer, and I don't think there is one in here. It just goes,
you know, I wonder if it falls in that genre where it almost isn't the banned book section type thing, because everybody goes, oh, D&D.
No,
I don't know if it still has that kind of outlook on it like it, you know, did for a while there. People thought, oh, it's evil.
The only thing I can think of is if you are a gamer, I am still a noob to this whole world, only been playing for a year by the time most listeners will listen to this. Scott has been kind of cluing me in, our friend Scott, listener and roommate at Dragon Con. He's
a big gamer.
He's a big, in more ways than one.
I meant.
But when he goes,
is that a fan?
He's picking out like the game rule books. I mean, there's multiple books. If you're going to go play Pathfinder, these books aren't cheap.
Right.
And you want your own copy so that you can refer to the rules. You're not going to go to the library and start a game and go, oh man, there's feats for elves, there's feats for dwarves, there's feats for wizard. Oh, let's go to the skills. I just found out my animal companion wolf can now do tricks that I've leveled up. I'm like, huh. You know, so that's kind of where I'm going, is you want your own copy of these rule books if you're a GM and if you're a general player. Now, I do realize that a lot of these are online. The Paizo rules are what we're using for our game. So, you know, I'm going to go get to the PDF this week so I can tell them what skills and I think I got to decide on skills and feats for my ranger character. So I think that's the first time we've talked in depth anything RPG on this show.
I know. Well, yeah. Well, I mean, we've talked about it briefly, but okay. So I wonder if maybe the reason it's not so much in the libraries like other books is maybe because it is a rule book. It's more of a product than, you know, fiction or something, you know, fact kind of. I don't know, maybe.
But if you, I guess I take their point. If you're going to do research for your story, your background, your character, your world, your environment that you're building up, yeah, there should be some books there that you can read and reference and kind of get your head into that space, which is probably where they're going, is why aren't there more of these fantasy books out there? And on that note, as we draw a big silence.
I don't know. I was trying to think. I'm thinking.
We want to know more from you.
Wait.
But first, I don't want to skip over the last bullet item. I already took that liberty. I get one mulligan in the show.
Yeah.
We just went from D&D to golf. Both are highly fantasy.
And games. Ah, there you go. High in fantasy. I'm great at golf. There you go. So today I took Harrison and we went and saw The Martian. And of course, I just read the book, you know, I finished it a couple weeks ago. And so I went into this movie fresh with that in my mind. And I read that it was a good, it was a faithful adaptation. And I think it was, but you could definitely tell the gaps where they took things out.
Oh, they have to. Yeah.
Yeah. I know. But there was one thing, and this really isn't a spoiler or anything, but you know, there's one point where he's having to spell out in rocks on the ground so they can take a picture of it with a satellite and get a message back to NASA. And we're watching it and Harrison goes, wow, he could just write a big SOS in the dirt. I said, well, hold that thought. But they never did.
Oh, they took it out.
And they were in the movie. And they didn't do it in the movie. I was like, oh, okay. I told him, I said, hold that thought, you know. So there's a few thing, problem-solving things that probably took more narrative in the book than they could put in a movie. And I understand that. And that was cool. But I thought it was a great movie. Matt Damon did well, especially since he was acting by himself for, you know, most of the movie. But yeah, it was pretty good.
So it's kind of like Castaway in space?
Yeah, that's what we were joking about. It was like, I'm ready for Tom Hanks. No, he didn't have a Wilson, but anyway, it was a great, I thought it was a great movie. I enjoyed it. It did follow along with what I had in my mind from the book, but I would recommend reading the book because it goes into a lot more. If you like the science and math kind of stuff,
mm-hmm.
where he's trying to sort out problems,
mm-hmm.
you know, trying to think out of the box with what materials he has available to him. So definitely read the book. But I would recommend the movie as well.
That's next on my audiobook list. I got to get through Man in the High Castle first.
Yeah, you'll like this though.
All right.
Oh, by the way,
in the High Castle comes back on.
Yeah, I was gonna say I just saw a graphic tile on Amazon on my Amazon Prime that Man in the High Castle is coming back in November.
Yes, I think we already mentioned that.
Did we mention that?
I'm pretty sure we did. I'm pretty sure we got all excited when we first heard it.
I never listened to you. No, we talked about there were new episodes were coming. I didn't realize they were coming. In November.
Yes. So. Okay. Now you know, listener, if you're listening to this in the next month after it was published. So, our question this week. Let's play the music while we're doing the question. That'll get us out of here quicker. Our question this week. If you could live in a video game, which would you jump into?
Get it jump?
Is Wreck-It Ralph count, or was that just a made-up one?
Actually, that's what I was thinking of when I thought of this question. So, but yeah, something like that.
All right.
No, that's a made up one.
Question of the week. We will put this on the social medias and things on Wednesday when our show comes out. But if you're a viewer and catching this now, feel free to drop us an email, technorama@chuckchat.com. Call the listener line, 206-222-2428. Or whenever you could be hearing this in 2017. We still want to hear from you. Assuming we still have a show by then.
Yeah, hopefully. Hopefully don't get canceled.
Let us know. And until next time. Give me a binary high five.
101.
Woohoo! We're out of here.
I can see where you might think this was a highly organized group, but trust me, it's not.